Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Okay, we're back. Thanks again for listening to the Patrick Madrid Show. As I mentioned, I have such a backlog of emails. Cyrus, you can attest to this. We're going to continue with the emails. Probably no phone calls this hour. We just have so much to get through. And if you want to send me an email, you can go to relevantradio.com/Patrick. And there you'll see a link that says contact. And click that and you'll be able to send an email to me directly. It comes right to me. And I do look forward to receiving them. I do read them all. And if possible, I will read them on the air. Now, my apologies once again. I have a very large stack. So some of these emails have been sitting in the stack for quite some time. So if you recognize your email and it's been a while since you sent it, that's why. Let's get to this one. This is from Preston. He says, Patrick, several credible Catholic sources state that hell is a choice and souls choose to go there. I agree with the logic and the statement, but have two hangups that I'm hoping you can help with. Number one, we believe in God's judgment. A judgment implies a situation where we are given a sentence, which we may or may not want or choose. I would argue that no one wants or chooses to go to prison unless it is self-serving, take a plea deal for less time or meals, or life is better in prison than homeless on the street. Why would anyone choose an eternal and painful state like hell? I don't buy that a person's choice to go to hell is equivalent to any particular wrong choice or combination of wrong choices that they made while living. Then it's no longer a choice in itself, but instead a consequence of choices, which is different in my opinion. I also question the, quote, full knowledge for mortal sin requirement for the choice, for the hell choice, if there isn't a separate independent choice at the moment of death where a person can receive the full knowledge of all sin and the effects of those sins on earth before their eternal choice is made. Several scripture passages directly discuss hell or imply the judgment of hell through analogy. None that I have looked at indicate hell as a choice, and some are even more drastically the opposite. He gives examples, Matthew chapter 13, verses 42 and 50, Matthew 22, verses 13, and Matthew chapter 25, verse 30. The closest verse that I can find that is less God throwing us into hell and more us choosing to go there would be Matthew chapter 7, verse 23, which says that the Greek word can mean to withdraw. Even though the word withdraw can indicate a bit of a choice, it still implies an overpowering force or coercion in the choice, which I'm sure you know the issues with that. Is there any clear biblical proof that hell is a choice, and how is that reconciled with all the verses that seem to contradict that it is a choice? Best regards, Preston. Okay, Preston, wonderfully well spelled out question. I give you points, especially for the precision of your question. So the answer is that hell is indeed a choice for this reason. Number one, God creates everything out of love and for love. This is a very important fundamental we have to keep in mind, because with it, it'll help us to understand more clearly what the answer to your question is. We have to begin with, why does God create us, knowing that some of us will go to hell, knowing that the devil, for example, would fall from his friendship with God and become Satan? God, of course, knows everything, and so it's no surprise to him when somebody chooses against God's will and winds up falling into sin. So why does he do this? Why does God create things in the first place? We can say with certitude that God does not need anything. He doesn't need the universe. Or if there are multi-universes, he doesn't need any of them, because he's completely perfect in himself. Unlimited love, joy, happiness, light, all of those transcendental perfections God is in himself. So he doesn't need company. He doesn't need entertainment. It's not as though God is lonely up there and created angels and human beings for the purpose of entertaining himself. So once we establish this reality, we can say, well, then why did God create us? And the answer is out of love. so he could share himself with his creatures. And all of us come from God, and all of us are going to God, all of his creatures. So this purpose for our even being here in the first place has to do with love. So that's the key, first of all, to understanding that hell and going to hell, for those who do go to hell, it must involve their own free will choice. For that reason, number one, because God creates us out of love and for love, but the for love part means that he creates us so that we can not only receive his love and comprehend it, but that we can also return it. He wants us to love him. What does Jesus say? He says the first and greatest commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and strength. So if you are not free, if you can't make a choice that is unencumbered by coercion or force, then you can't love. And yet God does love us and wants us to love him in return, hence the Catholic insistence on the nature of the human being as having free will. Because if it weren't free, then it wouldn't be love in return. It would be coercion, compulsion. We could not rightly call it love. So that right there is, I think, the key to unlocking this whole question, that it must be a choice on the part of the human being. Otherwise, not only would we not be free, that would also entail the error of Calvinism. It's not the only error of Calvinism, but one of the most egregious errors of Calvinism is the proposition that God creates all people, and some of them are predestined for heaven, and this predestination has nothing to do with their cooperation or anything, and they disdain the whole idea of cooperation or synergism, as they often put it. But an even worse dimension of this error is that it makes God into the author of evil, because he creates certain people for the express purpose of damnation. Those would be the reprobates. Now, I know I've been down this road many times with Calvinists, and I know all the rejoinders and all the comebacks and all the, well, whatabouts that they would say. I'm familiar with all that, but we don't need to go into those polemics to answer this question. This is another reason why the person who goes to hell has a certain responsibility for that, or certain guilt for that, because if he didn't choose to do things in this life that were contrary to the will of God, then God, in essence, is condemning that person to hell without him having a say in the matter. And that would make God the author of evil, because eternal separation from God is the greatest evil that can befall anyone. And if God is the cause of that, then God becomes the author of evil. But that, of course, is contrary to the nature of God. God is all good. He is all just. He is all merciful. So he could not be the author of evil, which is what would be entailed if hell were simply where people were sent, regardless of whether or not they had a chance to say yes to God and his plan. Okay, so that's the first little bit. But it's also true to say that, as you pointed out, that hell is a consequence of one's choices. Now, this is where I think where we can clarify this issue. You say that I don't buy the person's choices to go to hell. Well, keep in mind that the person chooses it in little bites along the way. It could be in one big bite. Maybe at the end of his life, he commits some spectacularly serious sin and winds up dying in that state. But more often than not, most people, when they wind up at the end of their lives and they are in the state of mortal sin when they die, which is the determining factor for somebody who goes to hell, it's a process over time. And it's lots of little yeses to sin, and yeses to some sins that are little, some sins that are really big. But it's a pattern of saying yes to sin and no to God, such that when the person dies and winds up going to hell and is sentenced to hell, because we're told that God will judge us. Jesus himself says that in Matthew chapter 25, that he will judge the nations, and some will go to heaven and some will go to hell. So the judgment part is certainly a component of this. But it's not, and I think this might be the sticking point here, it's not as though, as I think you're suggesting, that when the soul is now disembodied, death has taken place, the soul has gone into the afterlife, that the soul then chooses hell. No, the soul at that point fears hell and recognizes, oh my gosh, what have I done? I'm going to hell, the person is thinking to himself. I can't imagine the anguish and the fear that would enter into the soul of somebody. So with a little clarification, I think we can clear this part of it up. It's not, the church doesn't say, the Bible doesn't say, that at that moment, then you suddenly choose hell, because nobody in his right mind would do that. That's the last place you want to go, but there's no other place to go. Because if you die in the state of mortal sin, you have definitively, you have permanently, decisively, I'm trying to think of all the words we can use to describe this, said no to God. In other words, rather than saying, thy will be done, you've said, my will be done. And then God, in response, in judging the soul, judging him, yes, you are going to hell, and pronouncing that judgment, in essence says the same thing back to the soul, thy will be done. You didn't want to do my will, you wanted to do your will, okay, now you're going to do your will. You're going to be separated from me forever. So the two are not mutually exclusive. This is a long kind of roundabout way of saying that it is both a free will choice and it is a judgment on the part of God. So I hope that's helpful. I realize this is a big topic. I do recommend that book by Father F.X. Schuppe, S-C-H-O-U-P-P-E. It's called The Dogma of Hell. And perhaps you've already seen it, but if you haven't, I think it will shed even further light on this topic about how the soul freely chooses for or against God. And this is, of course, with the help of God's grace. We can't take any credit for choosing for God. He enables us to do that. Or as St. Paul says in Ephesians 2, he says, for by grace you have been saved through faith. This is a gift of God, is not of works, lest anyone should boast. So that cooperation with God, the synergy that is sometimes derided by Calvinists and others, is nothing more, when it's properly understood in a biblical sense, it's nothing more than God's grace enabling the soul to cooperate. Without God's grace, the soul can't cooperate. And so the soul, you and I, we can't even boast. We shouldn't presume to boast about, well, I cooperate with God. The only reason we can do that is because God enables it. Now, one thing that may be helpful with regard to that issue would be the analogy that I use sometimes, and that of a three-masted sailing ship. A three-masted sailing ship, the ship can move under the power of the wind. So the ship is not moving itself. The ship does not have a form of propulsion like an engine in the case of that type of ship. Rather, the ship is moved by an external force, which is the wind. But in order for the ship to be moved by the wind, and we could think of the wind as God's grace or God's sovereign will for the creature, the creature is enabled, so to speak, by being able to rig those sails, by unfurling the sails so that the wind can catch them and move the ship. So the wind is God's grace. The sails are how you yourself have been enabled by God's grace to cooperate with it. And then he moves you. So hopefully that's a helpful explanation for you. I do appreciate the very well-phrased question. Thank you. Here's one now.
And people can find that book. Go to relevantradio.com/Patrick. And then right there around the top area, there's a links button. Just click that, mm-hmm. and then you'll see The Dogma of Hell.
So, I'm glad you popped in with that, Cyrus. I almost forgot it. So, because I know every time I talk about that book, isn't it true, we get tons of people calling, what was that book that he talked about?
Every single time, yeah. Hopefully the publishers of that book have sent you a thank you letter.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that that book has done extremely well for them. It's been in reprint now for many decades. It came out at the end of the 19th century, but it's quite good. And it's right, as Cyrus said, it's right there. So if you go to relevantradio.com/Patrick, click on links, and you'll see the link for it. Now, I don't benefit in any way. I'm not selling those books to you, but we have a link there so you can see it. I don't think I've ever asked you the question, Cyrus. I know you've thumbed through the book before, but have you ever sat down and just read it through?
I'm scared to read that book because then I might have to change my patterns.
Yeah, ignorance is bliss at times,
right? That's
right.
Yep. That's why I'm smiling.
Maybe during, some Lenten reflection time or something, if you want to give it a shot. I do recommend it. It's definitely invigorating for you.
If I get it along with my entire family, like if everyone in my family happens to get it one Christmas, I'll know who it's from and I'll know who it's for.
Oh, you remember that story, don't you?
I do, yeah.
I won't go back through it, but Cyrus is referring to one Christmas when I gave everybody, you know, all the adults and teenagers in my family, probably about 10 or 12 people, a copy of this book, because I really only intended it for one person. But I couldn't give it to the one person.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. It was funny. She thanked me later, though.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's really cool.
All right. Well, thank you for that, Cyrus. And I'm just keeping an eye on the time here. Do we have time to get into another email?
Yeah, let's do one more. Let's do a quick one.
Okay. So this one comes in from Juan, who says, "Dear Patrick, I had a question about a vasectomy and how bad of a sin is it? I'm in a situation where if I do not do it, I most likely will get a divorce. My wife does not want to do the procedure on herself." He's referring there to a tubal ligation. "I am not asking her to do anything of that nature. We're in our 40s. We have four children. Our youngest child is about 2 years old. She, my wife, does not want to have any more children. As I hear you on the radio, you had mentioned it is a mortal sin to have a vasectomy. I am caught in between. I do not want to do this, if it's true that it's a sin in the eyes of God. Who would I disappoint, God or my wife? If I am left in making a decision, it would not be good. I'm looking at eternal life and living well under the rules of the Bible. Would you be able to guide me on this touchy subject? Thank you, Juan." All right, Juan, very, very important question you're asking. And, you know, as a married man myself, and there was a time when we had, you know, we were a young couple and we had 4 or 5 children and we started having children right away. So I can relate to your situation and understand what your wife is going through. When you've got a lot of kids and, you know, maybe there's not a lot of money in the budget, or maybe she's just worn out and she doesn't feel like she's mentally up to the task or emotionally or physically up to the task, that's not uncommon. So number one, no, I want to say it as firmly as possible. No, that the vasectomy is not a solution to this conundrum. It would just make the problem worse. In fact, a vasectomy is a form of self-mutilation, and the Bible forbids that under the commandment, thou shalt not kill. It's a subset. Killing in an absolute sense would be murder, but you can offend against that commandment by harming your body and doing things that would prevent you from living out your vocation in marriage, and this would certainly be part of it, because your vocation in marriage is founded upon two ends or goals that are just built into marriage. The first is procreation. It doesn't mean that God is ordering you to procreate, but he's enabled you and your wife with the means through your reproductive systems. He's enabled you to participate in his plan of salvation through procreation, and he makes it possible for you to have children. Again, he doesn't command it. He doesn't say that you must have a child every time you engage in the marital act. But rather, this is the fundamental or primary end of marriage is procreation, because if you didn't have procreation, we wouldn't have people. The secondary end of marriage is the union of the spouses, the love for each other, the friendship, the pleasure as part of that. That would be a subset of that section. That's also important, but it's subordinated to being open to God's will to have children if it be his will that you have children. So by having a vasectomy, you would just make matters worse, and you would be further complicating an already complicated situation. So my thought here would be, you can accommodate your wife's hesitance about having more children by doing something that God created for this purpose, and it's the monthly cycle. The woman's monthly cycle is designed naturally to have, the majority of it is an infertile time, and there's a small portion of that each month that is fertile. And so I would encourage you, turn away from this notion of a vasectomy for this reason, because if you have a vasectomy, not only are you committing a serious sin, but now you would be illicitly enjoying the good of marriage in the form of sexual pleasure without the responsibility. Without realizing it, you and your wife would be engaging in this very pleasurable, wonderful activity for the pure pleasure of it without being open to the possibility that God might want you to be responsible and accept new life into this world. So it would be taking, it's like having your cake and eating it too. Or it's another analogy would be if you were to gorge yourself on delicious food and then go in the other room in the vomitorium and vomit it all back up again. That's an eating disorder. So it's one thing to enjoy the food, and we all enjoy delicious food. There's no question about that. But we also have to eat responsibly. We have to count our calories. We have to watch, is this food going to harm my body? Is this good for me? Is this much food good for me, etc.? So in an analogous kind of way, a married couple that's enjoying the pleasure of sexual activity, but having used contraception or having been sterilized, thus foreclosing on the possibility that God might bless them with new life, that it's a misuse, it's an abuse of his gift of sex in marriage. So back to the issue of the monthly cycle. God designed the physiology of women so that you can tell with some observation methods that can be taught to you in a natural family planning class. You and your wife should take this class, and you and she will both learn how to observe the indications each month as to when you're approaching the time of what's called ovulation. This is when the ovum comes out of the ovary and comes into the position so that it can be fertilized. If it's going to be fertilized, it's in the right place to be fertilized. And so with the proper easy to master methods of observation and charting over a short period of time, within a matter of a few months, you'll have a very clear idea, at least most women do, when is the fertile time. So during that time of ovulation, when fertility takes place, and even if you wanted to be extra careful, you could build a day or two on either side of that just to be extra safe, but you can know very precisely when you would abstain from the marriage act. And then the two of you can show your love for each other in non-sexual ways, which is a very good thing for a marriage because it's a way of demonstrating through your actions that it's not just about that, that you love your wife and you will sacrifice for your wife and she for you. It's a very empowering and invigorating dimension of marriage when it's entered into with that spirit. And then what will happen is you and she can have a break from having more children. The church says that there must be a serious reason for this. And if she's feeling worn out and frazzled and she just can't take it anymore, that's a serious enough reason to look at spacing children for a while. So that would be my advice. Don't get the vasectomy, but go to your local parish and sign up for the local natural family planning classes. Countless millions of other couples have done it. They're very happy, by and large. The success rate is extremely high. In fact, some statistics I've seen have shown that it's even more, I don't want to say foolproof, that's not quite the right word, but it's more effective, let's say, than many forms of contraception. So don't go down the contraception road. That's a sin. Use natural family planning. That's God's plan, and it's purely natural and no harm to the body. I'll leave it at that. Well, Cyrus, I think it's time, for a break. Would you concur?
Yeah. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com.
Sir. Cyrus concurs. Okay. All right. Well, we will do that right now. We'll come back. I have plenty of emails ahead. Maybe yours is one of them. You'll find out on the other side of this quick timeout.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, we're back. Thanks again for listening. This email comes in from Ron. He says, recently on the Patrick Madrid Show, he mentioned a website where I might find more information regarding Catholic annulments. Could you please provide me with that website information? Your assistance is very helpful. Well, I have a feeling there could have been a couple of different ones that I had mentioned. I'd like to mention a book by Ed Peters. I know that's not a website, but it is a book on marriage and annulments. He's a canon lawyer, and it's easily available on Amazon. In fact, maybe we should get a copy of that book on the show page so that people can check it out. The website I probably mentioned is called Mary's Advocates. So M-A-R-Y-S-A-D-V O-C-A-T-E-S, marysadvocates.org. And that is a website that is, it's run by a woman whose husband walked out on her. Basically, her husband abandoned the marriage. And it was just a really sad situation. But the main thing is, she was the one left holding the bag. She didn't want the divorce. It was forced upon her. And so she began to look into, what does the church teach on this issue? What does the church's law say about this issue? What about the spouse who has been abandoned by the other spouse, and so on? So marysadvocates.org is a good website, not only because of the background, but also the resources that are available. There's quite a bit there. There are books, there are articles, there are videos, blog post entries, references for other sources. And that, I think, can be very helpful. I'm assuming that's probably the website you're thinking of. Now, if in the case there's any kind of like question about salvaging your marriage, that website, and I don't know if this fits into what you're asking, but that website is for Retrovi, and that's helpourmarriage.org, helpourmarriage.org. Next email comes in from Ellen, and Ellen says, "Hi, Patrick. I was at an event recently, and I wanted to meet you, but I didn't get a chance to meet you. I didn't realize that I would need an answer from you so soon. A coworker at the hospital was telling me about a good Catholic friend whose husband had left her and their 7 children for another woman. This man got their marriage annulled and is now married to another woman. My friend then said that he had money and a friend in the church and had greased the wheels to get this through. The wife has been left in difficult financial straits, and the children feel like the church's ruling that the first marriage was never valid has left them bastards. The final insult, as far as my friend is concerned, is that the husband married wife number 2 in the Catholic Church. I tried to explain that if they were given an annulment, that the marriage was determined to have never been sacramental." Okay, we'll come back to that. "That marriage, that Catholic marriage, is a covenant and not a contract. Something had to have been originally amiss. Also, the determination is done by a tribunal, not just one person. They are not easy to get, and I doubted that money influenced the decision. And that, of course, the children were not bastardized in the process. All of my getting rather heated efforts were met with deaf ears and the rolling of eyes. Did I miss anything in trying to defend the church? I agree that the guy sounds like a jerk, and at least she is now free to marry someone a lot better. But that didn't ease my friend's anger at the annulment ruling. Any suggestions?" All right. Several clarifications, I think, need to be made here. Number one, you are absolutely correct that in the case of a Catholic marriage that the church declares to have been null, that any children born in that marriage are by no means, in any sense whatsoever, considered bastards. They're not considered illegitimate. That is a determination or a category under the law. So the civil law is the one that would view a child born out of wedlock as illegitimate. I don't know if the term is widely used anymore, but that's sort of the historical way of describing it. The church recognizes the importance and worth and dignity of all children, regardless of how they came into existence, whether through a normal, typical marriage or through rape or through in vitro fertilization. So there can be some scenarios where a grave sin is committed and a child is conceived, in vitro fertilization being one example, rape being another example, and the church makes no distinction whatsoever between those children and children that are born to a happily married mom and dad. So that much is absolutely true. People need to hear that. Now, as for what appears to be bribery on the part of the man, I think that your hunch is probably correct. I think it's very unlikely to the point of being impossible. It's still possible, I suppose, but it's highly unlikely that he could have, what would that involve? Paid somebody off? You know, "Here, Monsignor, here's an extra $5,000 if you'll, you know, route this to the right channels or if you'll sign off on this." I mean, it's so improbable as to be impossible if you ask me. The people who work in marriage tribunals are very dedicated people. They're experts at what they do. They take it very seriously. And of course, they're doing this in the name of Christ and the church. So I don't think that dimension of the story would carry much weight in terms of the outcome of this process. Now, please keep in mind, here's another detail. The church does not annul marriages. The church does not annul a valid marriage. What the church does in the annulment process, and we hear people say that the church granted an annulment, that's just shorthand. That's just a colloquial way of saying what really happens, and that is that the church in this process reaches a conclusion in which it can declare that this marriage was null from the beginning, meaning that it was not valid from the get-go. The church does not have the authority or the power to, quote-unquote, annul a valid marriage. So the whole point of an annulment process is to determine, in good faith, whether or not that marriage was null from the beginning or was it valid from the beginning. If it was null from the beginning, either way, actually, if it was null from the beginning or valid from the beginning, it doesn't matter what happened after that point. Sometimes people think, well, my wife had an affair. Does that mean I can get an annulment? No, because it has nothing to do with the validity of the marriage on the day that you got married. So whether that happened or any other craziness happened, nothing that happens after the marriage takes place has any effect on the validity of the marriage. So that's another thing to keep in mind, is the church doesn't wave its wand and somehow dissolve a valid marriage. The third thing is, you mentioned that you explained that if they were given an annulment, that the marriage was determined to never have been sacramental. Well, the annulment process doesn't deal with the sacramentality of a marriage or lack thereof. The annulment process deals with whether or not the marriage was valid. Some marriages are valid and not sacramental. Some marriages are valid and sacramental. You can't have a sacramental marriage if it's not valid. So the sacramentality is not the issue. The issue for the tribunal is this a valid marriage? The other little tweak I would make is that Catholic marriage is indeed a covenant, but it is also a contract. It's not either a covenant or a contract. It is a contract. In fact, that's the essence of marriage, is that it's a public contract that is assented to publicly by both parties. And in the marriage contract, both spouses, the husband and the wife, they grant each other full rights over each other. So to live together under the same roof, they grant the right to the other for their bodies and all that that entails. Now, it's not an unrestricted absolute right. I mean, you don't become a slave to your wife or vice versa. It doesn't mean it in that sense. But in a way that is unique and person-specific, you grant the other person in this public contract when you exchange your vows, you grant this other person complete rights to you, to live with you, to procreate babies with you, and all that that entails. So that's another part of the thing that has to be taken into account. So to answer your final question, no, I think you did a good job in making the case for this issue, and I could understand why this woman would be antagonized and hurt. And even though she rolled her eyes, I wouldn't take that personally. I think the issue is she just didn't really understand. So I'm glad she has a friend in you to be able to help her. And I have a feeling that Mary's Advocates will be in a position to help you further if you'd like to talk with them as well. Okay, well, break time again. We'll be coming right back with more emails. I'm going to try to get through as many as I possibly can. That's one reason why we're not doing phone calls today. Well, that is the reason why we're not doing phone calls today. I want to do fair justice to all the emails that have stacked up. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app, and I will be right back.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, let's get back to the emails. This one comes in from Christina. She says, Patrick, I am in so much need of some good advice. I have a daughter. She has two kids, a little girl and a little boy. Now, these are little kids. She said, they are both from different fathers. My husband and I, especially I, supported her when she had the children. She made some bad choices, but now she went and got with a girl as her partner. She is living with her. It's been 8 months now. I am still, I don't even know how to explain how I feel. I'm still sad, worried, angry. More than anything, I don't want my daughter to go to hell. And on top of that, what about her two innocent kids? She is a great person, but she is living against God's will. I am so hurt. I can't stop thinking that if she dies in sin, she will go to hell. That is my biggest pain. I pray to God for her and her two kids. Everyone speaks about the feelings of some people and how they have the right to be happy. And I do believe everyone should be happy, but doing everything according to God's law. But they never speak about the great pain that we parents go through. No matter what, stop loving, stop worrying, or stop caring for your kids. Thank you very much. Well, this is one of those tragic situations where, as mom, you're not in a position really to change this situation. She's obviously an adult now, and if she's taken up this lifestyle, you're right that she is exposing the kids to a lifestyle that is sinful. And we have to call it what it is. We have to speak the truth in love, but we have to speak the truth. And so my best advice to you would be keep the lines of communication with your daughter open as best you can. Keep reminding her that you love her. You love her just the way she is, but you love her too much to let her stay that way. You'll always tell her the truth. You'll always be on the level with her. Keep those doors open. But when the time is right and the opportunity presents itself, let her know that she's doing something that's contrary to God's law. So this applies really to any sexual sin, and you don't have to be homosexual to fall into sexual sin. I mean, it happens to heterosexual people all the time. It could be a man and a woman living together in an unlawful way. So you're right to feel the way you do. My heart goes out to you. My advice would be pray very carefully for your daughter's conversion and ask the Lord specifically for that intention, for that desire of your heart. I would encourage you to pray the rosary as a specially powerful prayer for your daughter. Do what you can to help these little kids recognize that there's more to life and there's more to the truth than what they're seeing. And maybe behind the scenes, not behind her back, I'm not suggesting you do anything behind her back, but behind the scenes in a low-key way perhaps, if you can be that presence in the lives of these children that reminds them about God and about being good, even though they're in a situation where that's not being modeled for them, you can be there helping them to see what the gospel is and maybe get them some good materials. Perhaps her mom would let them have things from Holy Heroes. That's a resource that I like to recommend. But just keep praying for them and ask the Lord to help your daughter come to her senses so that she'll realize that not only for her own sake, what she's doing is injurious, but also for the sake of her children. Thank you. Let's go now to Margaret. Margaret says, hi, Mr. Madrid. You can call me Patrick. She says, I love listening to Father Rocky read the novena for the day. And she said a while back, she opened a link to an email to listen on the Relevant Radio website. She said, then I decided to click on and listen to you, meaning me, live. And I caught a bit of your program on that morning, and I tuned in just after you had mentioned the name of a controversial movie on Netflix about pedophilia. She says, I didn't catch the name, but I have since learned it. And by the way, just the name is a show called Cuties, and it's in France, and it's in French, but it's with subtitles. I haven't seen it, of course, but it sexualizes these little girls who are prepubescent little girls. I mean, like little girls, grammar school age girls. And if you go back and look this up on the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick, you can hear where I talk about that. Cyrus and I had a long conversation about this issue. So she says, when I found the program, you had been talking about canceling Netflix subscriptions as a way to demonstrate displeasure and disdain. A caller also said that he suggested selling Netflix stock. He says, I thought about this all weekend for two reasons. First, my elderly and ill Catholic mother, she at the time that she wrote this email, her mother was 87 years old, loves Netflix and, of course, would have no idea that such a movie existed on Netflix. She doesn't enjoy reading anymore, and she prays her rosary often, and she likes to watch series or movies on Netflix. Netflix has a lot of shows that originally ran on PBS, and she can find them now on Netflix. So while I appreciate and understand the purpose of your suggestion, she says there's more to it. There are so many streaming services, cable, satellite channels, and even local channels that are horrible. And so in the essence of her question is basically that. What do you think about having Netflix, even though some of the things on Netflix are bad? Well, I think that's a reasonable position to take. Back in the day when I was talking about this, and it's happened more than once, my advice was that if you want to send them a message, if you want to make them feel some pinch or a cost, then by canceling your subscription, that's probably the most effective way to do it. But you would not be committing a sin if you kept your Netflix subscription, or if you at some point down the road you restarted it. It's not as though doing that would be a sin. It would be akin to shopping with your Visa card or your MasterCard, and the only things you buy are good things and wholesome things, knowing nonetheless that Visa and MasterCard make a donation to Planned Parenthood. And these and many companies do it directly or indirectly. I talked a little bit about that earlier. So because practically anything you do or anywhere you go or any product you buy will have some kind of connection with something that's evil, obviously it would be untenable to just simply not use credit cards or not live in a house or not buy food or not fly on an airline. You know what I'm saying? So these are all ways in which we are in the world. It's all around you. But if your purpose in having Netflix, and this is, you know, there's nothing wrong with this, if the purpose is to have the good content, especially for your mom who's elderly and she needs this kind of diversion in her life when she's not able to read anymore, that's entirely proper. So I wouldn't want to leave you thinking, and maybe I did, so I apologize for that. I wouldn't want to leave you thinking that you're doing something wrong or sinful if you have a Netflix subscription. Or if you decided to cancel it and you decided to bring it back up, that's okay too. And this, of course, is just my opinion, but that is my opinion. Let's see. Let's go now to an email. This is from Linda, who says, Patrick, I was baptized Catholic and received my first Holy Communion, but I left the church and my Catholic faith behind as a teenager. My secular Jewish husband and I were married by a rabbi under the agreement that we would raise our children Jewish. I have been doing that, and with the added benefit of my husband and returning to God. Oddly enough, it was my husband who first discovered your radio show and told me I should listen to you. He has great respect for you. I did listen, and in 2017, I returned to my Catholic faith and made a full confession after more than 40 years. Wow, that is so awesome. I was welcomed back with open arms, she says. I told the priest everything I've told you, and he said I could still take Holy Communion. I fell away from my faith shortly after, but was pulled back during this Lenten season, this past Lenten season, after listening to you. I want to return again and make a full confession and even become confirmed. My husband and son support me. Since listening to Relevant Radio, I am not so sure that I can receive Holy Communion under my circumstances. What is the canon law regarding this? I want to do the right thing, not the feel-good thing. Even if I cannot take Holy Communion because of my marriage, I am still going to stay Catholic. Thank you for taking the time to help me. Thank you, and God bless you, Linda. Linda, what a beautiful letter. And it's so wonderful to see how God is drawing you so powerfully. And your words really ring true for me, and you recognize that you want to be with Jesus. So here's, I think, the bottom line for your question. You want to be with Jesus. You want to be Catholic. You want to practice your Catholic faith, which is the best of all possible situations. The way to do that is go to confession and tell the priest, as you said, all of your sins, make a good confession, don't leave anything out. So you want to confess any serious sins since the time of your last confession. Have a firm purpose of amendment, and then know that you're forgiven, and you will be able to receive Holy Communion. Now, the complicating factor here, it sounds like, although you didn't give me much information, and that's okay because it's a private issue, but reading between the lines here, it sounds as though there is a question about whether or not you are lawfully living with your husband. Now, you didn't talk about previous marriages. I don't know if there was a previous marriage for him or for you. But because he's not a Christian, you can have the church look at your marital situation to determine, number one, if it's valid, and number two, if it is valid, or if it's not valid, what would it take to make it valid? And the church can give you the help and the advice that you need. That will take answering some questions about his background. Was he ever married before? Were you ever married before? But it's not that difficult. It can be done. So if it looks like there's a question that needs to be determined by the church, and then you would wait and see what that is. One simple but not easy thing that you can do is to live as brother and sister. And I know that's a real sacrifice, and I know it's very difficult to do. But if you did that, then there would be nothing standing in your way of receiving Holy Communion. If that's the thing standing in your way, and you'd want to talk to your parish priest and get his advice on this because there are more questions that he could ask you. But if that's what's standing in your way, in other words, if the question is, well, you know, should you be living with your husband right now, then just simply live as brother and sister. I know it's a sacrifice, but then you have an absolute green light to practice your Catholic faith after you go to confession, receive communion, and then wait patiently for the church's determination. And then it may well be that the church says, okay, everything's good to go. And maybe we're going to convalidate the marriage. There are a variety of options. And then you would be in a good position to resume married life. I hope that's helpful to you. I really do. And once again, congratulations on having such a devotion to getting right with God. I think it's beautiful. And I also think, it looks like we have a little more time than I thought we did. So let's see. Yeah, I've got a couple of shorter emails. Jesus says, Patrick, I know you're good in this, so I'm trying to see if you can recommend a book for my nephew. He's in California, but he's moved to New York. He's away from the church. He has a lot of questions about the faith. I wonder if you can recommend to me a book that I can give him because I'm afraid he'll lose his faith completely. All right, well, there may be any number of reasons why he's in this situation. For what it's worth, I wrote a book called Why Be Catholic? 10 Answers to a Very Important Question. So from something coming from me, I think that might be a book that will give him the 50,000-foot view of the Catholic Church. What does the Church teach? What does it believe? Why should somebody become a Catholic? And all of the above. So that would be a good book if you ask me. Of course, I'm biased. Another book would be Your Life is Worth Living by Archbishop Fulton Sheen. And that's a classic in the field. If he's thinking about leaving the Catholic Church and maybe becoming a Protestant, I would give him a book called Surprised by Truth. The first volume, it's got 11 testimonies of people who were Protestant and they became Catholic. Now, full disclosure, I edited that book, but it has a powerful track record when it comes to helping people remain firm in their faith. And let's see, do I have time? I think I do. Let's try this one. We'll see. This is from Stephen. I'm not sure if he says, I understand that you attended University of Dallas for some graduate courses. He says, I was wondering what you thought of the education there. He says, I won't be studying on campus. I'll be doing distance learning. And I'm not sure if you have experience with the University of Dallas distance learning program, but I just wanted to see what you thought of the school. He says, I've also thought about maybe applying at other institutions, such as the Dominican Institute or Holy Apostles College, and wondering what you recommend. So I will tell you this. Yes, I did some postgraduate studies, they were graduate studies at the time at the University of Dallas, and that was in an external program called the IRPS program. But I found it very good, very helpful. I have high regard for University of Dallas, especially in their philosophy department. It is one among the best philosophy schools in the country. So depending on what you're interested in studying, you mentioned theology. I would say that you would be in good shape if you went to UD. I definitely recommend Holy Apostles. Full disclosure, I teach there. I'm an adjunct professor of apologetics. So if you took a theology degree at Holy Apostles College and Seminary, the chance is pretty good that you'd take my course at some point along the way. So who knows, maybe we'll meet there. Yes, I certainly would recommend the Dominican Institute. The Dominican Friars of the Eastern Province are excellent, and their academic pedagogy is superior. So those are all programs that I can personally say I am familiar with and I would recommend. And I think that's probably all the time I've got for this hour anyway. But we will be coming back with more in just a few moments. So please stand by. I've got a ton of emails I want to get through. Yours might be one of them. So if you want to find out if it is, just stay right there. I'll be right back with more right after this.